Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, where we discuss everything in the Hooniverse. Join us each week as we bring you news, rumor, and recap. And now your hosts, Jay Witten. You win this one, Internets! And Melissa Mazza.
We were playing fast and loose with the term.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing episodes that have already aired, as well as news that's public knowledge. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Have something you want to say? You can email us at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @gallifreyradio, or leave a comment on each episode at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. We've taken control of the TARDIS and are going back to visit previous incarnations of our beloved Doctor. This week, we watch the Tom Baker serial, City of Death.
Hello and welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio. Tonight, as always, with Melissa and Jay. Jay, how are you tonight?
Doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm great. So today we are going to be talking about some early Doctor Who. I have finally broken my early Doctor virginity and seen a few solid episodes from classic Doctor Who, and I've not been disappointed, so we're going to get into that a little bit later. I can't, you know, I really can't wait to talk to you about this, actually. So yeah, I think
it was a lot of fun going back and watching this stuff again. Yeah, I mean, like you said, we'll get into it in a few minutes, but first we've got a couple news stories that actually crept up this week.
We do. So, what do we have?
Well, the first is, let's see, where was it? One of the 10th episode of Series 7, so it's going to be, I guess, the third episode in Series 7B. Anyway, whatever it is, however it winds up being, they have confirmed that the title of this episode is Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. And don't know anything about it right now except for the fact that it's written by Stephen Thompson and it's going to be directed by Matt King. So This is all we know at this point. It's not the Gaiman episode, but I don't know. I mean, the title really sounds interesting. I'm like, this could be a really cool episode.
Well, you're actually wrong that this is all that we know at this point, because I actually have something to contribute to this, that Ashley Walters, who is allegedly a rapper-turned-actor, I apologize, but I've never heard of him until this moment, he is going to be guesting in this episode, and he says, in our episode, it will be the first time people get to see so much of the TARDIS. He went on to praise Matt Smith and Genevieve Coleman, who plays the new companion. He said, you can't beat being in Doctor Who. It's something I've grown up with my whole life, and working with Matt Smith was amazing. He's a really, really good actor, and just being a part of that huge BBC franchise was an incredible thing. And Genevieve Coleman is really good at what she does. It seems like she's enjoying her job, and I loved working with her. So that's all about, he's apparently going to be in the episode that you were just talking about, the Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. So it sounds like Jenna Louise Coleman is just really starting to blend in with the cast and crew, and
She's winning people over left and right. I mean, name one person who's upset that Jenna Louise Coleman is on TV.
We're happy. If you're unhappy with Jenna Louise Coleman, call us and we'll argue about it.
Exactly.
She's won us all over.
you can be upset that the pawns are gone. You know, that's understandable. But you can't be mad that they're bringing in Jenna Louise Coleman. You know, it's just, she's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And also there was an interesting story that started creeping up on Twitter today as we record. It's Tuesday. Apparently, let me get this right. Someone was interviewing John Sims, who played the Master in the third and fourth seasons. They were talking to him about the role, and he goes on record as saying, I'd love the opportunity to play him differently. I'd love to have another take on him, to be a bit quieter. He was saying that, you know, it was Russell Davies' idea to, you know, have such a lunatic doctor, you know, this crazy Joker style doctor. And he says, you know, he would love to come back and have the chance to do it in a more subdued fashion. I would love to see that, you know, cause we've got two extremes of the doctor or of the master. You know, you've got John Sims' portrayal when he's dancing on the aircraft carrier, and you know, then his Slim Shady look and everything, which he actually went on record as saying, that was a mistake, I shouldn't have listened to my instincts there. But you know, and then we've got the old style master, who was more like the I haven't seen much of him, so I'm just going off my own impression here, that he was more like, you know, the mustache twirling, you know, snidely whiplash kind of villain. You know, it was just, I'm evil for the sake of being evil, and there's no greater depth to my character. And it's like, I want to see more than that. You know, I mean, John Sims was awesome in the role, and I would love to see him kind of come back and say, okay, you know, he got trapped in the Time War or something and then fell through the crack or something, and, you know, somehow bring him back and say, you know, that he's grown through that experience and give us that master again, but toned down and you know, more depth to it.
Yeah. Yep. I like, so the theory that Rory was the master never panned out.
Yeah, exactly.
But I really like the idea that John Sim could return to play the master, because everyone who knows me personally knows that I kind of have a thing for him and never know whether to root for him or the Doctor when he's on screen. But I saw the story that you're referring to. He said he referred to his portrayal as a giggling lunatic,
yeah,
and how he wanted to take it to a very, very dark place instead. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, so I gotta, you know, Heath Ledger did the giggling lunatic, but very dark place, and did it perfectly.
Yeah.
Johnson, I'm not going to say he's no Heath Ledger, but he, you know, the master is not that kind of character. We've actually talked about it before, how certain people were upset, actually, at his portrayal, because they, you know, the master had apparently always been this, like, you know, quiet, dark, brooding, evil supervillain rather than this giggling lunatic.
Right. Yeah, well, then if you watched as it was playing out today, like, you know, I follow him on Twitter, and it was kind of interesting seeing it that, you know, after the story popped up on there, that, you know, all of these different headlines started coming up that, you know, he wants to come back, and there's, you know, they're driving to get him back on the show and this, that, and the other. And he came out, you know, this afternoon and said, look, I answered a very specific question. That's it. You know, they asked me if I would like to do it, and I said yes. No one has ever, you know, come out and said, you know, that it was gonna happen. They asked me if I enjoyed playing the role, and I said yes, I enjoyed it. These are the things I would do differently if I were given the chance. That's it. And, you know, I mean, you know how this math adds up with Doctor Who news. I mean, we watch it all the time. You know, there's a rumor that circulates somewhere in, like, you know, northern Idaho, and by noon, you know, it's clear across the planet that this is going to happen, you know? So it was just kind of funny watching that play out in real time.
I'm very glad that I didn't watch it play out in real time, and I heard about this later, because I think I would have been on the edge of my seat, like, oh my god, he's coming back. No, he's not coming back. He's coming back. What's
is
going
it gonna
on?
Happen?
Yeah. So I'm glad I was kind of cut out from that. So yeah, I am the problem.
I mean, I'll admit, when it was going on, I couldn't help but hope a little bit, but yeah, you know, I did have my heart crushed a little bit when he said that it was just a specific question. But other than that, you know, they're still running with production. Nothing real new coming out on that.
Yeah, I saw some stills from the set, and all I have to say is that Matt Smith looks so dapper, and I really hope that his style starts to take off and people start to kind of emulate the Doctor, because his look has kind of evolved a little bit, I guess, in this, in this season, and he looks so cute. that's all I have to say, because there's no, like, you know, there's nothing spoilery in these pictures or anything. It's just Matt Smith, like, wearing these, like, darker clothes and, like, you know, doing his thing.
Yeah, it's awesome seeing the change in the character, and I really can't wait to see how he's going to play it now that the Pawns have a, wow, I sounded like I was from Boston there.
The Pawns.
The Pawns. Hey, look, it's the Pawns. Yeah, but I would love to see how he evolves the character in this, that, yeah, obviously he's going to be more subdued, more, I dare say, darker after this loss.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't know how much time is going to be passed between the Angels Take Manhattan and the Christmas special. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, Amy and River were both very adamant about, you know, don't travel alone. And I think he's not going to listen to him. I think he's going to travel alone for a little bit. Yeah, I mean, we've seen that, especially in the past two series, that, you know, there are huge chunks of times, I mean, hundreds of years now, that have gone missing in his timeline.
Yeah, they've really done that a lot in this season, too. He's jumped over 200-300 years, something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's... I think that that's going to be a real possibility, that they're going to come back and he's like, yeah, I've been running around by myself for, you know, 50 years or whatever. You know, so... I don't know. I'm interested to see how it comes up, and, you know, 60 some odd days is too long to wait until the next one.
Oh God.
Anyway,
So I actually have a couple like minor kind of pieces of news, and I want to segue that into talking about these past Doctor Who episodes, if that makes any sense, and unless you have other.
No. Go for it.
So there's a PlayStation Vita Doctor Who game coming out, Doctor Who The Eternity Clock. It came out for the PlayStation 3, and now it's coming out for the Vita. So that's my little bit of news. And then the other one is there's a, I don't know what this is, a comic book or a cartoon, but Doctor Who Prisoners of Time by IDW Publishing. That's a comic.
It's a comic book, yes.
Yes. And it's featuring the Doctor, but it's actually the Doctor as portrayed by Hartnell. This is like first Doctor or second Doctor. Which,
that's going to be cool.
Yeah. William Hartnell and Barbara as his companion. So this is going to be, they're doing a series in January 2013. So I saw that, and it happened to kind of coincide with, you and I had talked last week about watching some classic Doctor Who, and we were going to start with the fourth Doctor. Mm-hmm. But I had Netflix and was bored, and I said, I'm going to try to, I naively thought that I would just work my way up to the fourth Doctor and just spend this whole week watching Doctor Who, and unfortunately it didn't happen that way. So what I watched was Doctor Who and the Aztecs, which was 1964, and then a Tom Baker episode, Doctor Who, City of Death. But I want to talk a little, just, you know, for a minute about the Aztecs, because this was William Hartnell and Barbara. So obviously, these are like, you know, Doctor and Companion that still resonate 50 years later, and people like to hear about them. Mm-hmm. And I was very, you know, I texted you when I watched it. I was like, oh my God, this is the funniest thing ever, because, you know, the special effects are so primitive and stuff. But it was, you know, it actually was Doctor Who, like, you know, it was recognizable as the show that I love, and I don't have much to say about the episodes itself, but I just wanted to mention that I watched it, because and I'm very glad that you watched it too. I'm sure it wasn't recently, but I'm glad that you've seen it too, so we can, you know, talk about it.
It was a while ago for me, but the one thing that I liked about it, and I told you this when you told me you were watching it, was that this was a good example of fixed time. You know, they go back, and the companion was saying that she wants to stop this sacrifice, and, you know, spoilers, you know, 50 years too late, but she wants to stop this human sacrifice from happening. She's like, this is barbaric, and they can't do this. And the doctor's like, no, you can't stop this. This is going to happen. And she tries and tries and tries through the whole story, and then finally they have to leave, and the sacrifice commences anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, this is fixed time. You know, this is what I understand it as. You can try and change it, but it's not going to. You don't wind up in some parallel universe. It's just, you can't stop it.
Yeah, I mean, and she tries to change time, and it doesn't work, and it ends up worse for everyone, and the point is still fixed in time. And this was like the first and last time that they've ever used fixed time completely. I feel like, you know, time can be rewritten has been the slogan for the last several seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're absolutely right. Like, because you texted that to me, that this is a good example of a fixed point in time before I actually finished watching it. And I was like, I'm going to have to look out for what he means. And then, like, when the human sacrifice was, like, about to go down and they're leaving in the TARDIS, I was like, oh, crap, like, that's it. Like, that's crazy. Like, that was... And, yeah, like, what I feel like is the Doctor here... He's like an old, you know, he's physically the actor's old, whatever. Like, so he presents this kind of world weary persona, and he, you know, he's seen these time wars and everything, and he just knows that this is a fixed point in time. You can't stop this human sacrifice. Like, notwithstanding that the sacrifice wants to be sacrificed and all that, like, you know, that's irrelevant.
Yeah,
but the Doctor, you know, just seems so resigned to it, and it's almost like he's come. Not full circle, but, you know, like, we see him now, like, would he be resigned to that? Would he, like, you know, I could totally see Amy convincing him to try to stop this human sacrifice, but as it turned out, it really was a fixed point in time, so no matter what, you know, no matter who tried to dissuade him, it would happen, so...
Yeah.
It was really interesting to see, like, him kind of leaving people to their fate when I know that he doesn't do that a lot in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it's a fixed point in time, like, you know, that's what it all hinges on. That's exactly it.
Yeah. I mean, it was very interesting to go back after having seen all of New Who and rewatching that and seeing where this show gets its roots from. It was very exciting to see in that thing. And, you know, it's, I don't know, it's educational, if nothing else, you know, just to see the difference.
And I like how Barbara seems to be, you know, like they straight out the gate had these strong female companions.
Mm-hmm.
When they decide that this chick is like a goddess, she just rolls with the punches and improv.
Yeah.
And I like that's my favorite thing about it. Like, all of his companions have always been able to do that, and so many people in real life would be like, wait, what? I have to do what? Like, but. You know, the Doctor always picks these right people who can just roll with the punches. So I really like that. I felt like it wasn't such a foreign thing being 1964. It actually, you know, Barbara was a very modern companion type. And I like that. And then my only other comment about that episode is his companion Susan calls him grandfather. And as far as I know, he has no, like, he's mentioned before that he's a father. Mm-hmm. And to the best of my knowledge, he has no other children that we know of except for Jenny from the Doctor's daughter. I don't know if you know if that's correct or not. But I wonder, could Susan be Jenny's daughter? Or does he have another child that we don't even know about?
No, as far as I can trace it, I haven't gone really in-depth to search it because I keep wanting to go back and actually watch. And so I don't want to spoil too much of it for myself. But, you know, it's... as far as I understand, she is actually his granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember how that plays out, but as far as I can recall, that is actually their relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it would probably fit the continuity better if she weren't really, like, and if that was just what she called him. But I think that she is too, and that's what got me wondering, like, because he's mentioned before that he has children, but I can't remember if it was like just in that one episode where he has a child. But.
Yeah, you were talking about how all the Doctor's companions are awesome, and there was something I was reading about, you know, why. Someone's explanation of why they're a fan of Doctor Who. And, I mean, it's this great little... I mean, it's just a paragraph, really, about how, you know, it gives us a chance to dream and imagine better than, you know, life may have dealt us or something. And the bottom part is what gets me. It says, that's the big reason why people want the Doctor to be real, so that they can really show off their true potential. You know, and I mean, we've commented on this before, is that, you know, that's what it is. Every time that someone gets around the Doctor, they realize how awesome they are. It's not the Doctor does anything to them. It's not that, you know, there's anything special about them per se. It's just that, you know, being around the Doctor unlocks that. They realize that I'm better than what everyone else is telling me I am.
We need to find these quotes and put them in the show notes, because there was another one, or it might even be the same quote that you're talking about, but the, I heard someone say about how do you know that you're not like Donna Noble, who, you know, did live up to her full potential and did all these amazing things, but had, of necessity, had her memory erased, and, you know, to this day doesn't know that she did all these great things. Like, how do you know that you haven't done great things and had your memory erased?
So, and then we decided this week that we were going to start off with the City of Death to start a classic Doctor story arc. And, you know, this is a fourth Doctor episode. So, you know, it's Tom Baker, who is widely regarded as one of the, you know, the most popular Doctors in either classic or New Who. He was the Doctor for 7 years. So, I mean, and the longest running Doctor ever. And this episode was actually filmed in Paris, on location. And this is actually where he and his companion, Romana, or the actress Lala Ward, Tom Baker and Lala Ward, actually fell in love while they were on location here, and eventually wound up getting married.
Yes, okay, so speaking of strong companions and stuff, I had no idea about Romana. Oh my god, she's so cool. But Lala Ward, on IMDb, like, she has this crazy life. She's nobility. She was born, like, the Honorable Sarah Ward. Her brother's a Viscount. She and Tom Baker fell in love, like you said, shortly after this. This was 1979. They got married, I think, later that year. Their marriage allegedly or apparently lasted a little over a year, 16 months or something. She's currently married to Richard Dawkins, the biologist, and does the illustrations in his books. That's crazy. I'm a devout Christian, but I'm also kind of a big Dawkins fan. I had no idea. Like, I had no idea that there was a Doctor Who connection there, and she's really iconic as Romana, right?
Right. Yeah, she's a time lady. So, you know, we have it officially. That's what you call a female Time Lord. She's just awesome in this episode. You know, she's really. I've heard her described as the Doctor with breasts, and that's. She really is. They don't play up the fact that she's female. They don't play her down because of it. She's just as important as he is, and, you know, really shows her stuff off in this. And it's really awesome to see that kind of play from someone.
Yeah, she was great. I liked they make her. To go to your point, they make her build a time machine or something, and she just does it without questioning in this episode. So,
yeah
it's definitely, like, a very cool Doctor-esque type. Apparently, she became, like, the president of the Time Lords or something in some other episodes. So, she's definitely, like, a cool time lady.
Yeah. And, yeah, I noticed a lot of times in this episode there were things that Tom Baker would do that were very, very reminiscent of some of the later incarnations of the Doctor.
Yeah. You know,
especially there was one part where they're sitting in the cafe and just the way he goes, "Well," I was like, "Whoa, that was just 10
Yes! Oh my god, oh my god. I wrote that down. I have "well, dot, dot, dot." I noticed that too. You're like, yes.
And I mean, that's the thing, is it's just... Yeah, I mean, clearly this came long before, you know, David Tennant was even thought of, but it was just, that's what it made me think of, because, I mean, it was just so spot on. It was awesome. But, you know, and then we've got the character of, what was it, Duggar?
Yeah.
The private detective.
Duggan,
yes. And, I mean, I love that he's just going through, you know, you've got the Doctor who's very, very anti-violence, and Duggar just, you know... Oh, it breathes. Punch it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was like a running joke through the episode that Duggan just hits things. To, you know, he busts through the wall. He, you know, and it's like the 70s wall that, like, there's like an outline where you see it's about to be busted through. he breaks a Ming vase over someone's head, a priceless antique. He's very violent. And of course, like, you know, and it starts to get a little grating, and I'm like, you know, what is this? What are they doing with this?
Yeah, it's like, really, okay, you know, it's getting old, but
right.
You know, and then of course,
but then of course, it comes in handy at the end, and like
he saves the human race with a the most important punch in history.
So I like Duggan a lot.
One thing my son pointed out while we were sitting there watching this, 10 years old, and you know, watching this show, and the thing that he's okay with the bad special effects and the weird costumes and things like that. The thing that throws him off is we're sitting there watching it and he goes, "Oh, that's not the Mona Lisa. It's too big."
Oh my God.
I was like, "What?" He's like, "No, the Mona Lisa's too big. That can't be the real one." I was like, "What are you talking about?" And sure enough, I look it up and you know, the Mona Lisa is actually only like 2.5 feet by 1¾ feet or something. So, I mean, it's
I've seen it. I've been to the Louvre and I've seen the Mona Lisa. It is. You're absolutely right. There were a couple of other like tells in the painting that it was wrong. You can see from other things that it's a fake. Your son's a genius.
it struck me as funny that I'm like, you know, the basketball with the legs glued on, hanging from a fishing string, that doesn't bother you. The painting being 6 inches oversized, that's what gets you?
Hey, you suspend your disbelief only so far.
The special effects in this, I mean, obviously, were horribly dated. You know, the...
Okay. I mean, you could very much see how it's filmed on VHS and stuff, and that bothered me more than the special effects. The special effects in the Aztecs were hilarious because it was like a toy TARDIS, like a Lego with some clay stuck on it. This was infinitely better, 1979, you know, several years later. Yeah. The mask. I'm like, what was my worst? Because at the end, there's a scene where the villain, Scaroth, is saying, "You see me as I truly am." And he's still wearing a suit and tie. And everything. It's like, really? Like, that's you as an alien?
At one point, like, they zoom in real close on the eye. But right before, like, they zoom in from, it's actually zooming in. And before it gets real close up on the eye, you know, it's real close up on the mask. And you can actually see through it to the actor's face.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't make out, like, a huge amount of detail, but you're just kind of like, wait, there's something in that face. So, it's really not a big deal, but it was just kind of funny seeing that. And it's
oh,
like,
man. I'm glad I didn't see that. It would have ruined it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a great episode, though, and I mean a great story. You know, that the human race being created simply by accident. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I thought that was a great, great little twist at the end there.
Well, and I just read about the Richard Dawkins connection. I was like, oh my God, like, this is so perfect. With the human race being created by accident, and like. When he actually holds the like the slime in his hand, like this is the amniotic fluid from which humanity emerged. but another thing, I like this was my first like I've never ever seen the Fourth Doctor in anything else, and I really liked this. Like I didn't know what to expect, and I was thinking that just based on his appearance alone, he's kind of off-putting. I thought it was going to be like a really goofy clown kind of character, and. He's not at all like he's the Doctor, like recognizably so. Like he's very funny and he's very witty. My favorite line was they throw him and then he goes, "What a wonderful butler! He's so violent."
Yeah.
Like Jenny just says it so joyfully. Like,
when
so many lines like that.
And then when they're sitting in the when they first get brought into the room and he's like sits down on the chair. And, he starts acting like they're guests in the house. He's like, yes, quite, yes. Can I please get something to drink? And, these are my compatriots, this person and this person. And he's just, as soon as he walks into the room, he just completely takes control of the situation. I was like, that's the Doctor right there. I mean, he just nailed it.
Well, I mean, he nailed it. He invented it.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know what to expect, and it was reassuring to see him be so in control and silly and yeah.
He was just absolutely fantastic. But, I mean, yeah, this is the way that Classic Who went. You know, they would have three or four stories, three or four episodes that, you know, just lumped together and created a story. So each story would span over, you know, 3 weeks to a month, and you would get a half hour chunk, and it was all part of a bigger story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we don't see that. You know, nowadays it's more of a monster of a week kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and which works, and you know, obviously like with last season they did have an overarching storyline. So, you know, we still get that, but this was built to be, you know, a 2 hour story. You know, it wasn't an artificially, hey, we're going to try and stretch this out. It was, you know, this is designed that way, and that it really made it cool.
Yeah, I mean, last week I had the misconception. You were the one who told me, no, these are episodes, it's not a movie, because I saw these hour 35 things, and I thought that they were, like, you know, standalone movies, like The Waters of Mars at the End of Time or something, you know, something like that. And it's not, because I remember hearing that they used to do it as like these, you know, 5 or 6 episode story arcs.
Mm-hmm.
But in the back of my mind, I guess I was still thinking that it was an hour long show, but this was actually a half hour, you know, 22
yes.
minute with commercial. So I think I would be annoyed, like, if I just saw 22 minutes of it, like, having to wait till the following week or whatever. So I am glad for the way that we do it now. But also that out, you know, a little bit over an hour and a half was a lot of time to tell the story and to bring closure and stuff,
mm-hmm.
which I think nowadays doesn't necessarily happen in all episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've kind of started getting into, I've got a lot of time at work and very little to do, and you get really bored listening to, you know, the radio. I get tired of hearing the same 6 songs all day long. So I've actually started downloading and listening to the Doctor Who radio dramas.
Oh.
And these are, they're amateurs and, you know, maybe a couple of professionals just doing a radio-style drama. Yeah, some of the voice acting in it is so incredibly horrible that you can't help but laugh at it.
Is it really? Because I was going to say, I actually get castings periodically for voice work to do this, and they're always saying the companion needs to have a voice that just reads as young, that it, you know, it could be boy or girl, because from week to week it's going to be different, like male or female, but you just need this, like, young-sounding voice.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's really, you know... If they have eight characters in a show, maybe one of them will be bad. Most of them are actually really good. Some of them are like, hey, you know what? They really gave that a good shot. You know? So,
I listened to one actually, because I've mentioned him before. I just love history and like mm-hmm. women in history. And one of my idols is Anne Boleyn, Henry VIII's second wife. So I think I just Googled Anne Boleyn once and came up with a Doctor Who radio story drama in which she played a part. And it was actually, it was really good. I want to say that it was like the Doctor and Barbara. Like, it was like this old man, and I believe he was calling the companion Barbara. I'm not sure. But like the voice was definitely old, and it was a story about Henry VIII and all this stuff, but it was actually really good and really easy to follow, surprisingly. You know, in this day and age, radio mm-hmm. dramas are not really such a thing anymore.
Yeah,
but I liked it. But, you know, have you listened to many of them, or
yeah, I've listened to probably 7 or 8 of them now, and they're, well, I say 7 or 8, they're actually broken up like the old style show, where, you know, you've got 3 or 4 episodes that may last about a half hour or something. So it's
mm-hmm.
that's what originally made me think about this, was the fact that these are designed very, very much like those. And yeah, you know, it's so I've probably listened to 7 or 8 of the total story so far.
Okay. Is it, do they say, like, now, like I said, I thought it was like the first or second Doctor, whatever that is, in the episode that I listened to, do they say specifically which incarnation of the Doctor it is?
No, and it's actually, See, because I made that mistake when I first started listening to it, because I thought, I was like, oh, okay, well, this is obviously the, you know, fourth Doctor, and, oh, this sounds a lot like Peter Davison. They must be going for the fifth Doctor here, but it's actually, like, they keep it separate enough from the show. You've still got the Doctor, you've still got the TARDIS, you've still got, you know, UNIT in some of them, so it's like, you've still got some of those touchstones, but they don't follow the TV show. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got companions that were never actually companions in the TV show. You've got, you know, I've heard of him regenerate like at least three times in the few that I've heard of. So it's like, you know, it's, they clearly don't follow the same story.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of crossover between the two of them. So you can, you know, you can listen to one, to the radio dramas and not have to worry about getting spoiled on the TV show. You can listen to it without ever having seen the TV show. You know, they don't necessarily feed into one another, but, you know, especially now while we don't have anything new to watch, it's more Doctor Who, you know? So,
I mean, that's what, that was just the coolest thing, to sit down and be like, I'm going to watch new Doctor Who. Like,
yeah.
All right, it might be 50 years old, but it is new to me.
Exactly. You know, I mean, that's what it is, too, is like, once you get past that initial, you know, this episode is older than I am kind of mentality, you're sitting down to watch Doctor Who. You know,
yeah.
this is no different than, you know, Matt Smith. Well, I mean, it's very, very different from Matt Smith, but, you know, it's still the Doctor. It's still the same show. It's just paced a little bit differently than you're used to.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you haven't watched any classic Who, if you've been holding off for whatever reason, go sit down and watch an episode. You know, just pick one at random. I think the first one that I watched was The Three Doctors. Yeah, the one with, it had the first three Doctors. You know, John Pertwee, Patrick Troughton, and William Hartnell.
Mm-hmm.
All three of them in it. So it was like, okay, I get a little bit of taste of each one, and then, actually, no, I take that back. I think the first one I watched was The Aztecs, and then I watched The Three Doctors. But anyway, you know, you just pick somewhere and jump in. You know, it's so worth it to start to see what has started creating this mythos.
Yeah. And it's Doctor Who. Like, everyone needs to, and everyone needs to start listening to the radio dramas too, because like you said, like, it's kind of standalone. But I was just really impressed with how, like, you know, this was the Doctor. This is, you know, when you're, whether you're talking about First Doctor, Fourth Doctor, Tenth Doctor, 11th Doctor, they really have done a good job of that continuity, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's just all kinds of fun. You know, I mean, you get to see where the first, you know, the first time they mention him having two hearts, or, you know, his first encounter with, you know, the Santarans, you know, so all this stuff that feeds into the show that we've come to know and love, you know, and you can go back and enjoy the framework that built it.
Right.
It's really, really is worth it.
Yeah. So let's, we're going to continue this next week, definitely. So, were we going to jump right to the Fifth Doctor next week?
Yeah, next week I think the one that we decided we're going to watch is the Caves of Androzani, which is the final Fifth Doctor episode. So you can tell we're not following any sort of pattern here. We're just picking some out at random, basically. But yeah, this is the final episode of the Fifth Doctor, who was, I think he was only in it for two seasons.
Okay.
But anyway, so yeah, we'll be watching that next week. So if you want to get a jump start on it, so you know what we're talking about, you know, it's on Netflix. It's on Amazon streaming. You know, you can find it out there. So
yeah, I mean, for some reason I couldn't find, when I looked up Doctor Who, and I couldn't find City of Death until I actually looked up City of Death on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So for anyone wondering, if anyone's out there, I had to actually look up the title and not just Doctor Who. So it might be the same for Caves of however you pronounce that. Yeah. But, yeah, these are all actually very easily accessible, and I hadn't realized that until now.
And, I mean, most of the time, I don't know how it goes for everybody else, but you know, a lot of times I use Netflix for a lot of my viewing, and you know, because I watch Doctor Who, it'll always throw up the thing, hey, because you watch this, you know, check these out, and it'll always be like full of classic Who, and then there'll be like Torchwood or something, you know. So,
yeah.
But I mean, it's just full of classic Doctor Who. So, you know, if you don't want to watch the Caves of Androthani, just pick another one. Start there. Yeah, you know, it's well worth it.
It's funny. I think Netflix, I need to give them some credit because John Cleese has a little cameo
yes,
in this episode.
He does.
And after I watched it, it was like, because you watched Doctor Who, it was recommending all kinds of Monty Python things to me.
I wanted to touch on that too, the mentions of about art in this episode. You know, they keep talking about the Mona Lisa being this masterpiece and, you know, one of the most recognizable works of art and this, that, and the other. And, you know, the doctor's like, well, you know, it is very pretty. And it's like, yeah, I mean, isn't that what it's about? You know, I mean, if you look at art and it's like, oh yeah, well, it's meant to represent, you know, like you said, John Cleese and the woman standing there looking at the TARDIS, just going on and spouting gibberish about how it's non-existential usefulness. It enhances the, you know, they're just going off at the mouth, and it's like, you know, if it's not pretty, what's the point?
Well, yeah, no, and honestly, that is the way that some people talk about art. Like, that was not even an exaggeration.
Especially for that time period, too, you know? I mean,
yeah.
And it was so funny to me, like, seeing that. And then you've got the doctor on the other side who's like, you know, it's like, well, why would he need six paintings of the moon? Well, you know, it is very pretty, you know? What it boils down to, you know?
And I the doctor, so you can always count on him to just, you know.
Yeah, get to the heart of the matter. No, I did like the fact that they did a lot more with the time travel aspect in this than we're really used to. You know, I mean, obviously they deal with time travel in the fact that, hey, this episode takes place in the Old West, and this episode takes place in, you know, 5 billion AD or whatever. You know, it's... Mm-hmm. So, you know, they do that, but this one actually dealt with traveling from this point in time and back to this point and then back to this point. You know, you've got the villain who is scattered across time and across time. You know, he's got shards of himself all throughout history. And, you know, then the doctor going back and let me see how I can explain this. The way that I think about time travel in fiction is that, yeah, I think about it in realistic terms. If you go back and do something, that's how it is. Yeah.
Right.
Have you ever seen the movie Frequency?
No. Wait, am I though? What is the premise?
Basically, this firefighter comes across his old ham radio. His father died when he was young, and he comes across his ham radio, and through some, you know, wibbly wobbly timey wimey, he's able to connect from that ham radio to his father on the same ham radio. 30 years prior or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can actually talk through time. And I remember at one point, you know, in the movie, you see the dad sitting there at the desk and using his knife and carving in a message saying, I'm here. And then the guy sits down and he looks at the desk and he sees these letters like forming on the desk, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, if the guy is writing that 30 years ago, it would be there right now.
Right. You know?
And this episode kind of touched on that, you know, where you know, where they find the paintings walled up and they've been there for 500 years. You know, and then the doctor goes back and, you know, comes across Scaroth having them commissioned. It's like, he's not having them commissioned and then just, oh, they're popping up and here they are. And, you know, you can't watch it happening in real time. It's
right.
It happened 500 years ago, and therefore today that's how it is. And so, you know, the way I kind of look at it is, if you went back in time and changed something, I wouldn't be able to watch it happen. My brain would automatically be reset because that's how it always is. Yeah.
Right.
If you went back and killed Hitler before World War II, you know, before World War II ever happened, I wouldn't be like, oh my god, somebody went back in time and killed him before it happened. No, it's just like...
It never happened.
I mean, World War II, you know? It's like, yeah, it never occurred. So, yeah, who's Hitler?
Right.
And that's how this episode kind of played that out. Instead of saying, oh yeah, no, we're going to change this, and everyone in the future is going to realize, hey, there it is, it's fixed. I went back in time and changed it. That's how it was this way in the future, you know? So... I like that the way that they did that. You know, I wish that they did more with time travel like that in the new series, because that stuff fascinates me and I love it. You know, it's obviously completely fiction, but you know, that's what this show is supposed to be about. You know, it's fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of mentioned this earlier, how this isn't a show that when things are changed in history, that it creates a new timeline and they like really explore that new timeline. Like, they have kind of done things like that, but that's not generally its view of time travel. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that always creates an interesting thing for science fiction. And it really reminds me of in Lost, their whole thing was what happened. So you could go to the past and try to change the past and do all kinds of things, but if what happened already happened where you were in the future, there's nothing you could do to change it. You might do something that changes things, but that just means that you were causing what was originally going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
Like, so I think Doctor Who doesn't quite go that far, but it's a similar kind of thing where it's not a branching time, but it's, you know, within the same timeline, they have to... that's what they have to work with. And this episode was, because I found myself so many times thinking, well, why don't they just go back in time and correct it? But, you know, they've thrown in various explanations about crossing time streams or whatever.
They're not Marty McFly and the DeLorean going back and, you know, creating an alternate version.
Well, that's what Lost referenced when seeing the Marty McFly has a picture that's fading away and everything, and that just goes back to the frequency thing of you wouldn't see the carving happening in real time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the show does, you know, it avoids that kind of...
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things, we could have like 2 or 3 full podcasts just on this subject, you know, so we don't want to delve too deeply into the rabbit hole tonight, but yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I did notice, and I just thought that, you know, I like how it played around with that a bit more than we're used to.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's about time for us to go ahead and wrap it up.
Yeah, that's all I've got on this episode. I'm glad we did get, we got a little bit deeper into it than I actually was expecting. So, and I was very happy with Classic Who, and I'm going to watch as many episodes now as I can find. So next week we're going to talk about the Fifth Doctor's last episode.
Yes.
Very much looking forward to it.
Alright, well, this has been episode 11 of Gallifrey Public Radio, and we will see you guys next week.
See you then.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week on iTunes or at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. Have something you want to say, or just want to say hello? Send us an email at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com, or leave us a comment on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter, @GallifreyRadio. You can also find our hosts, @_Melissa, or @Skullpound. Music by Dan Doodly Doo and Retcon Addict.